Welcome to Cat Chat and Dog Talk. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Sean, the natural vet, who's an integrative holistic vet who's here to help you make good decisions for your pet's wellness. We love cats and dogs and the people who care for them. We're here every week to take your calls about your pets, and we'll answer on the air any question you send us to radiopetlady@gmail.com and send your mailing address for a sample of Whole Life Pets freeze-dried protein treats for cats and dogs, radiopetlady@gmail.com. Please check out all the wonderful pet shows I co-host every week on our network. Check out the schedule at radiopetlady.com. Cat Chat and Dog Talk is a production of Eight Paws LLC and Dr. Sean Messonnier, DVM PC, which are solely responsible for its content. And we'd like to thank our sponsors, companies we've invited to be here. Our number is 888-627-6008. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 888-627-6008. Dr. Sean, another week has flown by, and here I am hanging out with you again. Isn't it a shock?
Yeah, it is. What, you and I are both here, or just another week's gone by? Sometimes it's a shock we're here, you know?
You know, it's a shock. We've lived a whole nother week.
Well, you know, praise the Lord for that.
We praise the Lord for that and pass the mashed potatoes. Anything jumping or interesting at your office?
Actually, you probably like what isn't interesting. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because my receptionist, we've been going through kind of a crazy time at work, which is good. I mean, we're probably too busy, but, you know, we have pets that are sick, that are dying, that need our help, and you can't really turn them away. But, you know, one of the things I want to encourage pet owners when they call their vet's office, this is going to sound stupid, but I have to say it anyway.
Okay.
Make sure that you're clear why you're coming to the doctor's office. And I'll give you an example. My receptionist almost every day the last few weeks will get off the phone and will say, oh, what did that person want? She goes, you know what? I spent 30 minutes on the phone. I have no clue what they wanted. They kind of want this. The pet maybe isn't feeling good, kind of feeling good, threw up once 3 weeks ago, maybe isn't feeling good today, kind of now has a limp. We also noticed a lump on its body. And she'll be like, so what do we need to do for you today? Well, I'm not really sure what's going on. It's like, how do you book that appointment? So please try to tell the receptionist why you need to come to the office. If it's 20 problems, tell them it's 20 problems. But the hemming and hawing and you're not sure what you need to do, we can't help you effectively that way. You've got to know why you're coming to the doctor's office. I know that sounds stupid, but I'm amazed how many calls we get like that.
And they'll book the appointment and they'll come in, and when they sit down with you, are they clear then?
But what's interesting is we'll book them like a 30-minute appointment for, say, a dog that's vomiting. Then we need to look at this skin. And, oh, by the way, his ears are itching him. And, yeah, you know, he's got a funny toenail we need to have looked at. Well, all of a sudden it's a 3-hour appointment and we can't do that. I can't help you effectively because I've got other people waiting for help. So, you know, if you need a longer appointment, you know, obviously there's a charge for that, but we'll do it for you. It's not a big deal.
That's a really good point, Sean, because actually I've had an appointment set to have all the Lyme vaccine given to all three of my dogs. They were due within about 2 weeks. And so even for them to find the right amount of time to give three dogs a vaccine, and I'm like, well, really, is it that much longer for three than one? It is, actually. And then Scooby just had this surgery that I want to talk to you about shortly because people need to hear about it. So the stitches need to come out. And do I want to go an hour and change to the specialty fabulous surgeon who did it? Or do I want my regular vet to do it? My regular vet, and, you know, selfishly, you're making a really good point. Selfishly, I was just going to think, well, I'm just going to go for the visit. I'm going to be charged per dog anyway. And I'll just say, would you take the stitches out? Well, I mean, the incision is, it's got to have 40 stitches. That's not something you do in a minute. So in fact, luckily, I did think to do just what you said. And if I hadn't thought of it, I'd call back and say, will there be time to take the stitches out? And if not, could we find a block of time that'll be enough? It's a good point.
Well, I think people need to understand that you have to be clear, and we're going to book your appointment based upon what you tell us. If you start adding other things on there, we may not be able to do everything that visit, which, of course, inconveniences you, but we can't inconvenience other people that are waiting. Now, I always try to help people, but that always causes a backup, and that can be frustrating at times, and we don't want to do that.
Yeah, then you've got people, too many people parked in the waiting room with dogs that are growling and panting and shivering and shaking and cats that are quaking in their carrier. Yeah, you want to try and keep a nice flow of inbox, outbox, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we have a call from Jessica, which I think is Jessica, our wonderful biochemist. Is that Jessica?
Yes, that's me.
Welcome back to the show. Great to have you here. What did you want to talk about?
Hey, so I had a question about an anesthesia issue I had with my little dog, Charlie, 2 weeks ago now, maybe 3 weeks.
Good. I love talking about anesthesia.
Yes.
Oh, goody. So he went in for his routine dental, and when I dropped him off, you know, they told me that there's always the chance that if their heart rate drops too low, they give them a glycopyrrolate injection to, I guess, normalize everything. Mm-hmm. I guess when I picked him up, they said that as soon as they gave him the anesthesia injection, his heart rate dropped lot, and they had to give him the injection, but I was wondering what would maybe cause that, and what should I do when he has
Jessica,
to
Jessica, what we you don't your line yeah. is not great, Jessica.
Oh, sorry.
You're calling, here, I guess, from a cell phone. We're having a really hard time hearing you. If you can just give our engineer your number, he's going to call you so we get a good line. Because it's a great question, but we need to be able to hear it really well, okay? So he's going to call you right back now. So this is a good one for you, Sean, because you're very knowledgeable about anesthesia, and you're always trying to reassure people, especially your older pets that need dental work, that anesthesia is safe, and it certainly is.
Yes.
But it's interesting that she was in a situation where they said, well, if X happens, Y is what we always do. I've never had a vet tell me that. In fact, Scooby-Doo, in his prior three surgeries, including a tooth extraction and the two surgeries on his knee, they said he was throwing PVCs or something. His heart rate was funky. And he should see a cardiologist. But it turns out that's just what his heart does on anesthesia.
Sure.
But he's fine. So I wasn't going to go running down the cardiac path, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm interested to hear what this situation is. Charlie's a little kind of a Yorkshire Terrier, but I think he's more like a Silky. He's the one that had severe separation anxiety, and Dr. Elizabeth sent him an Adaptil collar, and he got an anxiety wrap, and all of his anxiety was over. Doug, have we got Jessica back? Waiting for Jessica. She must have a really bad phone line, I guess.
Nick, I'd like to talk to her a little bit more. It sounds like a very interesting question, and it's one that a lot of people get very scared about, anesthesia. I just had two talks today with people who are nervous about anesthesia, so I wanted to go over that. And if she doesn't call back, I can still give kind of my standard talk, but I'd love to talk to her about her specific questions if we get her back on the phone.
We'll get her back if Doug can just dial the number. That would be excellent. I guess we could move on a little bit to another topic because this is not – well, I'll tell you a little bit about Scooby's surgery. And it's
okay.
Something that's actually been of great concern to me, in that my regular vet – now, I don't want to put you on the spot and put you in the hot seat and say, okay, what would you do? But what would you do if you had Jessica, we need you to call back. You won't answer your phone, according to our engineer. So you need to call again. She's a friend of the show, and she's a great gal. So I know she's not that flaky. There seems to be something wrong with her phone. The misery and the joy of technology. If you had sent me to a specialty surgeon because the dog needed an ACL repair, and anyone that doesn't know what that is, it's the joint in the knee that, especially on a 100-pound dog, they usually repair with something called TPLO, which is putting hard, they actually saw the bone, right, Sean? And they put hardware. They put a plate and about six very big screws to hold the sawed
bone.
Yeah,
I mean, it really depends. Together. They got a couple of different options for surgery, but what you're talking about is a TPLO, which is, you know, one of the two, I guess, more common procedures they'll do, especially for bigger dogs.
They claim that if they just do the tightrope surgery, where they just sort of use a soft material to, like, create a new ACL, that it's not stable. I've had dogs.
Well, you know, in bigger dogs, it really depends on the surgeon. When we do surgery at our office, I have a surgeon who'll come in and do TPLO surgery for cruciate ligaments, and he believes, even with bigger dogs, that the suture material thread you talked about still works very well. He has very few of them break down. I know the surgeons that do TPLOs obviously like the TPLOs. I think it just is more or less what you're comfortable with. There's obviously a cost difference, and owners need to be comfortable with. If you do the suture material, you know, if it does break down, you got to go back and redo it. But at the same time, with the TPLO, you got hardware in there. You got a little longer healing time involved because you're cutting bone.
That's right.
And I think it's a personal preference. What would you like to do and what can you afford to do? Of course, you have pet health insurance. It's kind of a moot point. But which way is best for you and your pet, I guess, is the best way to
look at it. Oh, the other thing is that has to be considered is lifestyle. Now, if I had a large dog whose life was on a leash, I would never have done the hardware. But I have a dog that's completely off leash. They go flying out of a dog door, take a sharp left turn, go galloping into the woods. And it's those sharp turns, rapid starts and stops, that probably won't hold up to the suture.
Prone to their cruciate ligaments rupturing with the turning.
Exactly. Exactly. So if I'd had a lifestyle or could have maintained a lifestyle that didn't involve that many starts and stops and, you know, rapid takeoffs. Well, the bad part of the story is that he had a bad reaction soon after the surgery. He'd had the other knee done about a year before. And after the sutures were taken out, about 2 weeks later, when you have any of these big surgeries, about 2 weeks later, you take the stitches out, the outside is all healed, and this thing opened up again from the inside, and they had to go back in and do the surgery again. Not the metal again, but sort it all out. So you knew there was something a bit funky in this situation. And then an infection developed over the kind of scarred area some period of time later. To be honest with you, I don't even remember now. Call it 6 months, some amount of time. Now, according to the surgeon, my vet, because I'm just me, I mean, you know, I try to be as smart as I can as a dog owner, but really I'm no different than anybody else out there. We just totally depend on our vets. Like if you were my vet, Sean, and you said to me, I'm just going to give you antibiotics for that, I would think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But if you'd said to me, Tracy, you should go back to the surgeon and have him reevaluate this, the surgeon apparently, he tells me now 2 years later, if they had told him, he would have taken it out immediately, which he just did this past week.
Oh, all right.
Because there were three more times of infection in that same site. It was antibiotic resistant. They tried one antibiotic. They cultured it. They tried another. At no time did they say to me, we should really get you back to, this is obviously a red flag situation, and you should go back to the orthopedist. By the way, I had his cell phone number. He said to me, why didn't you call me? And it's like, you think, well, your own vet is making all the right decisions. I mean, don't you think there's a time when your everyday vet should be able to say, this is outside of my scope, there's something else going on here?
You know, I wish they would. When I talk to holistic vets, I tell them one of my goals, which I know I will never see, is where one day it would be malpractice, not just not to refer to a specialist, because that's already malpractice if you don't refer to a specialist and you try to handle things you shouldn't handle.
Really?
But to where referring to a holistic doctor would be malpractice if you don't do that, because
wow,
we have an area of expertise as well. That's a lot of politics. I don't expect to see that happen in my lifetime. But if I don't refer to someone and I try to do something outside of my skill level and doesn't work, that's malpractice, because I had someone who could have done it better than I could have, like the ACL surgery. I don't do that.
That's right.
I technically know how to do it. I would never want to do it. And if I did you know, technically.
And you don't do three of them a day.
No, I don't do any ever.
That's right.
It's a pain in the rear end, so I don't do that.
So if I was your patient and you sent me over to the orthopedic at the specialty place and an infection happened, would you just try to muck along and sort it out for 2 solid years?
Well, truthfully, if an infection happened, I would be sending you back to the doctor who did the surgery.
Exactly.
You're better able to handle those complications. If I did
the surgery,
I could handle that. Or if I couldn't, I'd send you somewhere. But no, 2 years. I mean, that's – I don't understand
that. Yeah, on and off for 2 years, infections would crop up. We'd treat them, and then they crop up again. So that's my sad story to everybody. You can love your own vet, but if your vet doesn't have the confidence and the strong ego to say, you know what, something's going on here, I don't understand, it's not getting better, you need to go back to either that surgeon or an internist or, I don't know, you know, an infectious disease specialist, whatever it may be. So that's just a little kind of word of wisdom to everybody that if things aren't, this is what Donna Spector always says on The Expert Vet. You know, I'm going to be talking to her about this next week on Monday night on the show. If the treatment isn't going as expected, a good veterinarian, and she understands that a lot of specialists will try to kind of keep the patient from your regular vet, so there's a little territoriality. She said, the minute that you don't cure something in your regular vet's office, it doesn't come out the way it's supposed to, the antibiotic isn't a fix, or the whatever it may be isn't a fix, you need to send it to somebody else. Because clearly, it's already out of control, out of your control, out of your skill set, out of your knowledge base.
Yeah.
So I just want to encourage people to not tough it out like I did and think, well, I guess it's just an infection, because
– especially with any kind of bone thing. It's never just an infection. That's a real big deal.
And then
deal.
The really shocking thing, the hardware comes out. The 6 screws come out. It all goes cleanly. The bone looks great. They didn't x-ray it beforehand and afterhand. The bone looks fine. Do you know that dog, one day after surgery, big surgery, I'm telling you, this is a huge incision, was less lame after the surgery than he had been for months and months and months and months. That's how much the hardware or the screws was bothering him. How about that?
That's great, yeah.
Yeah, great, but, you know, you feel like a jackass and yourself and your vet down the path, you know?
Sure.
Well, we've got Jessica back, but let's go to a break first. And when Jessica comes back, we're going to have this really interesting anesthesia conversation, and we'll be able to hear her. So we'll be right back after this quick word. This show is brought to you by Waruva, a privately owned company that makes pet food in a human food facility. So it's good enough for you to eat. All the flavors of Waruva, Cats in the Kitchen, and their more economical BFF, Best Feline Friend brands, are great for finicky little dogs and choosy cats, especially those you're trying to transition away from dry foods. Waruva chooses not to make any dry food because carbohydrates are inappropriate for an obligate carnivore, and they believe your pussycat deserves to eat as well as you do. This show is supported by the pheromone products Feelaway for cats and Adaptil for dogs. Pheromones are chemical communicators that are a natural signal of comfort in your pet's brain. Adaptil can help with problems like separation anxiety in dogs, and Feelaway diffusers can reduce problems in a multi-cat household. Veterinary behaviorists often recommend Feelaway and Adaptil as stress relievers to solve behavior problems. Pheromones can help adopted cats and dogs make the adjustment to their new home and comfort young puppies and kittens who have just left their litters. Look for Feelaway and Adaptil at RadioPetLady.com, where you can buy them from Dr. Sean's online store, PetCareNaturally.com. This show is also brought to you by Nordic Naturals for people and their pets. Research shows that even the best diets are deficient in the essential fatty acids found in their omega-3 oils. Nordic Naturals uses sustainably sourced wild fish from healthy stocks with third-party testing to guarantee purity and freshness. Nordic Naturals Omega Pet products bring the same health benefits to the cats and dogs in your family when you add Nordic Naturals omega-3 fish oil to their bowls every day. And Nordic has got a special deal for all of you listeners. You put Pet Radio 13, meaning 2013, in the code box at NordicNaturals.com. Anything you order for you or your pets, every single time you shop, will be 15% off. It's a pretty good deal. Also free shipping on $25 or more. Just put Pet Radio 13 when you go to NordicNaturals.com. They have so many cool products, but the Pet Omega in a bottle is the one that I use for the big dogs. I discovered after like 6 years, this is the more economical way to do it. So don't buy the capsules for the big dogs. Get it in a bottle. Here's our number. If you want to talk to Dr. Sean, ask any questions. We're at 888-627-6008. And we have a good friend of the show, Jessica, back again. We hope with a better signal. Hey there, Jessica. How are you sounding?
Hey there. Much better. I think I was in a funky spot.
Okay, so tell us again and describe Charlie to Dr. Sean. Like he's kind of like the size and shape, if you will, of a silky terrier, right?
Yeah, kind of. He's a Yorkie poodle mix, and he should be 15 pounds. And I just found out when we went to the vet that he was actually 18 and a half pounds. So got to go on a diet there for him.
That's okay.
But he went in for his dental, just, you know, routine cleaning, and they said that as soon as they put him under the anesthesia, his heart rate dropped a lot, and they had to give him, glycopyrrolate injection, and then they said that brought his heart rate back up, and they could do the dental, and everything was fine. But then when I looked on the bill that they give, where, you know, they break down everything they gave them, I also saw an azithromycin injection and a Remodel injection. And so I was just wondering, because they didn't list, unless azithromycin was it, but I'm guessing that probably wasn't the anesthesia, but I could be wrong. What should I do in the future for when he has to have, you know, more dental cleanings?
Were they able to clean his teeth, or did they not clean the teeth?
They cleaned his teeth, and then they also found that he had a baby tooth that never came out, and they only figured it out because it was starting to come a little loose, so they pulled that out. And so they did the full procedure and everything, and he came home. He was kind of droopy for a couple of days, but he's now back to his old carrier self.
Okay.
A couple of days he was groggy?
It was about 2 days that he was just really kind of out of it. He's kind of got like a curly tail at the end, and it was just, he wouldn't even curl his tail, and he just kind of walk around with his head down, and yeah, he was just, and normally he's just bouncing off the walls, running around playing with the other dogs.
So does that seem like a kind of a long reaction for just as a separate issue, Sean?
Well, it really depends what anesthesia they use. You mentioned the azithromycin, which is a strong tranquilizer. Do you know what they gave him for anesthesia?
That I don't know. I was trying to find out, and the vet tech couldn't figure it out at the time, so I had just kind of let it go for the time being. But I also, with the same vet, took my dog Bailey, who's an American Eskimo. I took him there to have his dental done back in November, and he had he didn't have to have the injection to bring his heart rate back up, but for probably 3 days he was completely out of it. The only thing I could get him to eat was canned Boruva. I mean, he was just
wow. That's which wasn't really weird.
All right, so let's talk about this. So first of all, you know, pets should not be going home and not waking up for 3 days. I hear this way too much, and there's no reason for this. Obviously, the azithromycin and or whatever else they're giving them is just strong, and there's no reason for doing that. Now, as far as the heart rate falling, technically, every person and pet's heart rate falls during anesthesia. That's a normal response to anesthetic. Some fall a bunch, depending upon the sedatives used. We have pets whose heart rate will fall 70%. But as long as their vitals are okay, I usually don't get overly worried about it. You can use glycopyrrolate to help kick the heart rate up a little bit if you need to. So that doesn't per se mean anything dangerous to me. I'm a little bit concerned, though, like I said, with whatever they're using, because when I have owners who come to me who are scared of anesthesia and they don't want to put their pets back under to clean their teeth, they tell me the exact story you've just told me, that the pet was groggy for a day or two, wouldn't move. And I'm thinking, this is just malpractice. Why would you send a pet home that is this way? There's no reason for that at all. So I would be hesitant. I don't know these vets, but I'm just, what you're telling me is I wouldn't go get my pet put under anesthesia like that again. I'd find another vet or say, look, I want some other anesthesia, like a little bit of gas or something, where this pet's going to wake right up, come home, no hangover effect. And, you know, I just think that should be standard state of the art. It's not. But I'll give you an example. I spoke to a lady yesterday who had a little chihuahua, and she didn't have a lot of money. Came to me because the dog has a little breast tumor, possibly cancer. And she said, you know, I need to save up some money to afford this. It's going to be a couple of weeks. And I said, well, that's fine. Your dog's okay. It's not going to make a difference for a few weeks. But she said, I really want you to do it. I know it costs more than the low-cost vet down the street, but they don't even have oxygen there. It's like, well, of course, they're low-cost. I mean, you're getting what you pay for. If you want oxygen, that costs more money. If your dog gets into a problem there, they're not going to offer the same help that we're going to offer here. Plus, we're doing gas anesthesia here, so your dog's going to go home fully awake, not hungover for 3 days. So there is a cost difference. Some vets still charge a lot for that groggy anesthesia. But I just don't think there's any reason for that. If I need your pet sedated after surgery because maybe we had an ACL surgery, I'll send home some sedatives and tell you your dog's going to be sedate. But I'm not sending him home to not wake up for 3 days. That's just inexcusable, especially for
I have a few questions, Sean. Acepromazine is something that's used to tranquilize horses. So
yes.
We all think of it as a horse tranquilizer, Jessica. In fact, there was one thing when I used to show competitively, one trainer tried to kill another. They were some lover's spat and injected them with acepromazine and did or nearly killed them. Why would you have to give a tranquilizer, Sean, to a teeny tiny dog?
Well, let me also say with horses, and I haven't done horse medicine in a while, but tranquilizers like acepromazine in a horse, I'm not even sure they're using that much because there are some issues with the penises of the male horse where they hang out forever and they can actually have some medical problems.
Oh my God.
You have to be careful with that. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with using a tranquilizer to be part of your pre-anesthetic package of medication, which theoretically will lower the amount of anesthesia you need.
I see.
Now, once again, there's not necessarily a right or wrong. I don't typically use acepromazine unless I know the pet's going to be fractious after surgery, very rambunctious, and I don't want that. But a dental cleaning, there's no reason for that. If I'm spaying a pet or doing an ACL surgery, and I know this dog is going to be jumping all over the place when he wakes up, I'm going to tell the owner ahead of time he's going to get a little bit of ace and he's going to be kind of quiet and sedate. But he should still be functional and alert. You know, there are degrees of sedation. And if for some reason the pet is over-sedated that I didn't expect, he's going to the emergency clinic that night. He's going to get babysat at the emergency clinic because I don't want him going home in that condition.
Because you don't know what will happen with his heart and his breathing because he's in such an abnormal condition. I tell you, Jessica, this is really shocking, especially about Bailey. Yeah. 3 days of a dog being out of it. I'll give you an example of the surgery. I really think it's very fair to say this doctor is lousy at what he does. I mean, just plain old lousy.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I could tell he was actually getting dizzy when I took him outside to go to the bathroom because I watched him stare at the ground for a minute and he was kind of swaying and then he threw up a small amount. And then I just picked him up and carried him the rest of the way.
This is just for cleaning the teeth. This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, this is a dental.
This is not any major. I want to correct you on something while I'm thinking of it, because you mentioned earlier, and I'm so glad you said this, because I hate it when people say this. I'm going to use you as an example, but I'm glad you said this. When you said you took him in there for routine dental cleaning, I want people to understand there is no routine surgery. There is no routine anesthesia. You know, I can do a routine anesthesia and the pet drops over dead 5 seconds later. And you think, well, what happened? I did this anesthesia the same way thousands of times. There's nothing routine. While I know what I should expect from anesthesia and surgery, I never know what I'm going to get when that pet's under anesthesia, or if I'm trying to do a spay and the pet only has one ovary and the uterus is misplaced and, you know, where is everything going? So I want people to understand, if you go in with this idea that things are routine, well, number one, why does it cost so much when it's routine? Well, nothing's routine. Number two, I'm going to have potential problems I'm not expecting. I need to be able to deal with and handle. And things, you know, the price may go up. I may find problems I don't expect. I may go in and have to pull 5 teeth I never expected. So I don't want doctors or patients to view anesthesia as routine, because when you do that, especially if you're the doctor, you become very complacent and you get kind of lazy, and accidents happen when you're lazy, and that's when patients die. So even though, yeah, it's just a dental cleaning, every time I put a pet under anesthesia, there's always a thought in the back of my mind, this pet may not wake up. Now, I don't think that all the time, and I'm not, you know, scared to death to anesthetize patients. We anesthetize patients other doctors won't touch because they're scared of them. They're older, they have heart problems, they have kidney problems, so we're known for that anesthesia. But I tell owners up front, I can never guarantee a procedure. I can never make the risk zero, but I can get it pretty darn close to zero. But nothing is routine in my practice. If I think things are routine, I'm going to make mistakes, and that's when accidents and problems happen.
That's a point really well made. I had a human surgeon once say that to me when I said, well, can't you just, you know, do one more surgery? I mean, it's just like simple surgery. And she said, there is no surgery that's simple. If it were simple, anyone could do it.
Yeah.
You know? And Jessica, Scooby just had this huge surgery on his knee, okay, because he's like, his body's fighting an infection. and they have to go in and unscrew these six. They gave me back the hardware. I cannot believe this is in a dog's body. These screws were as long as an emery board. So six of these screws and this heavy piece of metal. So when I look at the bill, it shows an hour for anesthesia and 30 additional minutes. And I said to the vet tech, an hour and a half of anesthesia? And she quickly looked at her notes because it's a specialty place and they take it very seriously. And she said, he went under at X o'clock and it was actually an hour and 42 minutes. So that's a surgery of 1 hour and 42 minutes. And he, at 2 o'clock, they said to call and see how he was doing. And they said he was sleepy but alert when they said his name and I could come at five. When I came to get him at five, he was 100%. He got himself into the car. So that's an hour and 45 minutes of a major surgery by a, you know, board certified orthopedic surgeon. So for your dogs to be zonkified for days from a dental cleaning, which is much lighter anesthesia and for much less time, this guy doesn't know what the heck he's doing.
No, there's something that's not right. But this is typical, though. This is not just this one vet. I'm not just picking on this guy or this lady, but I hear this story way too often, and I know why people don't want to have these, I'm going to use the word routine, but these common procedures done, because this needs to be done on a regular basis. And if you're scared to do it, and I can see why you're scared, I'd be scared to go back and do this too with this procedure. I just think there's no excuse for this. There really isn't.
Yeah.
You're a smart woman, Jessica.
You know. The same vet.
Yeah, luckily because, you live in an area where you have choices, right?
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is when I had him neutered back when we were living in Florida and we had a different vet, he came home acting like, you know, a normal dog.
And that's how he
Right.
So you would have never known he was ever under anesthesia or even had a surgery. So that's why when I picked him up from the dental cleaning, I was just shocked at how badly he took the medication.
Well, the only, you know, you might think, well, just one dog had a bad reaction, but it's such a long period of time. And then you have another completely different dog having a similar experience. I really think, you know, I guess you could keep seeing that vet for quote unquote routine things that don't involve anesthesia, but you'd probably be a lot better off starting fresh someplace. And, we all think, oh, we'll feel bad having the records shipped out and just say, you know what? If you want to tell them the truth, you can tell them the truth. I don't think you handled that anesthesia really well, and I'm not comfortable with the condition my dogs were in. So I'm going to go somewhere else, and maybe you need some continuing education.
I was wondering if there is an anesthesia that maybe you recommend for smaller dogs or dogs that are more sensitive, or does it really just depend anesthesia and, you know, different dogs or –
Well, you know, when I hear stories about, you know, certain breeds or certain pets being sensitive to anesthesia, I don't really think any are sensitive. I know there are certain breed issues like with greyhounds or sighthounds. You have to be careful with barbiturates because they really don't wake up for several days. It's not that they're sensitive. That's just their metabolism and their body fat, et cetera. What I do in my practice, this depends upon the age, of course, but I will usually use some sort of pre-anesthetic sedative, something like butorphanol, which is really great for old pets. I had one yesterday I gave butorphanol to. Sometimes I'll use xylazine. Now, when I use xylazine, those heart rates are going to drop a bunch, but they're monitored. I use low-dose xylazine. I give very little gas, and then we reverse the xylazine when I'm done. In most cases, I can keep pets pretty light, except for surgeries like ACL surgeries or cutting into their abdomens. If I'm removing tumors or cysts or warts or cleaning their teeth, I want them as lightly anesthetized as possible. I want them waking up as soon as possible when I'm done. I want them going home as soon as I'm done. And they're going home totally wide awake. There's none of this hangover stuff. Sometimes with butorphanol, like yesterday, my friend's dog, that dog was still kind of slightly groggy at home. And I warned him, you know, it's basically like morphine. I said, so he's probably going to rest today. But he wasn't hypothermic. He wasn't like you described with your dog for several days. He just had he just had a good nap. If he didn't want to eat dinner, I wasn't overly worried about that as long as the next day he's fine, because some pets don't want to eat after anesthesia, and that's okay. Not a big problem.
I think, Jessica, because you're so knowledgeable about, you know, medicine, you're a biochemist, I think it's really legitimate when you call up an office to make a new relationship, say, I've actually calling because I've had a bad experience with two of my pets having their teeth cleaned and having an extended reaction to the anesthesia. And may I ask what anesthesia your office uses? And they should be just like Sean, real quick to answer. And you should get an answer that you feel comfortable with. And get a few answers and then call us back and run them by Sean, because this is an area that he's really knowledgeable about. And you can probably find a place that is more conservative and thoughtful and clever about how they do it.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, because Bailey's is coming up again in November, and Felix still has to have his done in sometime this year. I forget what month. But, yeah,
well,
I mean,
you clearly are not going to go back to the vet you've been with. I mean, that much, I think, is obvious.
Yeah.
It's definitely time to turn over a new stone. And I think that before you even run up a vet visit, ask on the phone, what do you use? What is your usual, anesthesia that you use for a teeth cleaning? See what they say. And if it's not the drugs that Sean mentioned, say, thanks, I'll be back to you. And then call us up. Don't even just Dr. Google it. Call us, because the more that we all hear about this, the more smart we all get. You know, we don't want anybody else to be in the shoes you were in. I'm really glad you called. It was a great question. We love that you're a friend of the show, and we have to go to a break. But we send lots of hugs and kisses to Bailey and Charlie and Felix, and don't want any more groggy boys after just having their teeth cleaned up, okay? Have a great night, and
thanks
for the call. Of course. We're going to go to a break. The number for those of you that are out there that have any kind of questions about anesthesia, we're actually going to discuss euthanasia, quite different, similar-sounding word, but entirely different, when we come back. 888-627-6008. Give us a call. We're here for you. Support for this show comes from VaxiCheck. Are you worried about the harmful side effects of over-vaccinating your dog? But is your vet worried whether your dog still has protection from previous vaccinations? VaxiCheck is a new blood titer test done right in your vet's office that shows whether your dog has immunity to the deadly core diseases and needs revaccination or not. VaxiCheck should be used on puppies to confirm whether their puppy shots really worked. Shelters should use VaxiCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones. VaxiCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxiCheck for cats is coming soon. This show is brought to you by Halo Holistic Natural Dog and Cat Foods, which are made from real ingredients you can recognize. Read the ingredients on the label of your own dry dog food. Can you identify what's in there? Halo uses real meat in their kibble, no rendered byproducts, chicken meal, or chemicals. The company emphasizes giving back by making donations to shelters through freekibble.com, because Halo believes less fortunate felines and canines deserve great nutrition, too. Halo is a private company, partly owned by Ellen DeGeneres, where they are genuinely dedicated to keeping your pet happy and healthy, inside and out. Precious Cat Litter is privately owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian whose litters are designed to appeal to kitties and protect their health. His renowned Cat-A-Track litter has a blend of herbs which entice cats into the litter box. Respiratory Relief Litter is low dust for pussycats with asthma, which makes it healthy for people and other pets in the family, too. And there are special litters for long-haired and senior cats as well. Precious Cat donates litter to shelters and rescues across the country. We are back. You're listening to Cat Chat and Dog Talk. Dr. Sean, the natural vet, is here to answer your questions, 888-627-6008. Let's talk about euthanasia, not anesthesia. What is your experience in all the years you've had your practice about euthanasia? I've always felt people often wait too long to put to sleep an older or suffering pet, but you may have had a very different experience than me.
You know, I think sometimes they do. The reason I wanted to bring this up is a case I had this past week that was frustrating. It was a dog that I had been treating for a few days, wasn't getting better. Told him that we needed to go ahead and do, refer to the specialist for an ultrasound. Went to the specialist, and unfortunately, of course, the dog had splenic cancer.
Ooh.
And it had already spread.
Ooh.
And the specialist basically said, you know what, if this were my dog, I'd put him down today. There's nothing we can do. Well, these people are shocked. They're in tears to go from their dog's not feeling well to you need to put your dog down in the next 5 minutes because that's what we need to do.
Pretty cold.
I talked to them and said, look, you know, don't do anything yet. Your dog is doing fine. He's not great, obviously, but he's doing okay. Let's give him the weekend, give him some steroids, give him some medicine, see how he's feeling. We can always do euthanasia. And, of course, the dog survived the weekend, did okay, not a problem. But the point I'm trying to make is – And this is going to sound somewhat boastful and egotistical, but one of my mottos, I guess, is before you put your pet down, come see me. Or to rephrase
that,
before you put your pet down, go see a holistic vet. Now, truthfully, we would rather not see them on death's door because sometimes we're going to tell you euthanasia maybe is the best thing. But I think unless the pet is truly suffering, there's always a chance that maybe they would live a little bit longer. We could be talking a few weeks, a few months, maybe 12 months. And I can always do euthanasia for a pet. I can't always reverse euthanasia. I can never reverse euthanasia. So let's not rush in. Well, but it's true, though, and I'm very blunt with people. You know, I can always end a pet's life, and I will tell you, and I believe it's time to do it. But I can't take that back if after the fact you go, you know, gee, I wonder, did I really make the right decision or not?
Yes.
I'd rather give your pet a chance, and I've done this several times, and sometimes we were wrong, and the pet still crashed on us, and euthanasia was the best choice. But many times, especially these pets with cancer, if we can make them feel better, try to get them into at least a temporary remission, and not always using chemotherapy, just using some natural therapies or some steroids, many times they'll live, you know, several months, maybe a little bit longer, which at least gives you a little more time with your pet, to accept the poor diagnosis and prognosis, spend some quality time with the pet before the disease overwhelms the pet and we need to do something else.
Because I guess, you know, animals know when they're ill. There's no doubt about it. And they know when they're very ill. I mean, there's no doubt about that either, even though nature insists for a dog and a cat that they cover it up. So you have to cover up pain, suck it up, cover it up, not disclose it because, you know, deep instinct, genetic wiring, if you're in the wild and you show your weakness and your illness, then you're going to be the
that's
one
right.
that's going to be killed by the other critters. But they know when they're really bad off. And yet that emotional bond with us is as real for them as it is for us. So that amount of time to have a quiet unwinding of a relationship, to be able to nurture or appreciate that bond in a very intense and bittersweet way, I think has a lot of value for both sides.
And yes, I agree.
I think that's something that you know,
people need to talk to their doctors about these things. It's like the lady we were talking to with the anesthesia that
–
you know, you've got to have a good rapport with your doctor. And these doctors that just think they're God and it's their way or the highway, that's just not any way to help anybody.
It has to be a dialogue. It has to be a back and forth. And it's not easy for doctors. And I appreciate the fact, and I'm sure your clients do too, that you're willing to say what a lot of vets aren't, which is, you know what, it's time. Because so many vets, I think probably out of respect for the human-animal bond and for the regret people can have later, they're very slow to say, you know, it's time. They're more like, you'll know when it's time. But golly, we don't really know when it's time. I mean, I've had dogs that I've put to sleep when it wasn't absolutely time, but the quality of their life was so awful from whatever the situations was that I didn't want them to go into the awfulness. There's other people whose dogs are pooing and peeing all over themselves. They can't get out of bed. They can still wag. They can still eat. But to me, from my opinion, of at least the dogs I've owned, they've lost their dignity. They've lost any ability to kind of, you know, be mobile or have bodily functions that were under their control. But everybody looks at it differently. On the other hand, I had one dog that had what appeared to be stomach cancer, and I didn't know enough about cancer. This was about 10 years ago to know, and maybe 10 years ago they couldn't have treated it, but now you really could treat it. So we just did steroids. And you know, she had 6 months, Sean.
Well, I know. That's why I don't understand why some of these vets are just so quick to recommend euthanasia. It just doesn't make any sense.
And you're finding that people are coming to you where another vet has said to them, pull the plug?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, isn't it? Or sometimes I'll send them to a specialist just for some help with diagnostic testing, and they come back to me or crying on the phone. You know, they want to put the dog down. They want to put the cat down. It's like, no. Come back. We'll talk some more.
Well, I want to take a break and come back to this when we come back because Dr. Sue, who is the pet cancer vet on the network, she's looking forward to, you know, having the show be live with callers and be able to have people in the Texas area that want advice about oncology to be able to come to you as part of a quality of life because she totally believes that all the great oncology bells and whistles that she's got, whether they're surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, whether or not they're appropriate, the whole holistic side is really important for the pet's wellness and for people to feel they're doing something really positive, you know, something really nurturing. And that's a really important part of your supplements and the whole holistic veterinary way of looking at things. It really feeds the soul of the person while they're going through a really, you know, emotionally devastating time. And you hope the pet is not going through a physically devastating time during that period. We're going to take a quick break when we come back. Let's sort of wrap up this topic so people have a takeaway where it really helps them when they find themselves in these sad shoes, which one day we all find ourselves in these shoes with our pets. So give a call if you have any questions about when is the right time. 888-627-6008. We have to take a quick break and we'll be right back. This show is brought to you by Vectra 3D for Dogs, a safe and effective topical anti-tick and flea treatment that you put on your dog's skin once a month to repel parasites with the newest technology. Vectra 3D creates a shield on your dog's skin that repels ticks and kills them fast and reliably for the entire month while being safe for the people in your family. Older products do not last the full 30 days and only kill ticks that bite your dog, which can actually transmit the many tick-borne diseases. Vectra for cats and dogs who live where there are no ticks is the anti-flea topical treatment that kills all three life cycles of the flea. Vectra is only available from practicing veterinarians. To learn more and find out how your own vet can get the Vectra products, go to RadioPetLady.com. Support for this show comes from The Honest Kitchen, a family-owned company that makes dehydrated pet foods from 100% human-grade ingredients. Lucy at The Honest Kitchen knows that the least processed foods are the most nutritious and developed her unique foods based on this principle. The Honest Kitchen's all-natural, clean, safe products can assist dogs and cats with chronic health issues like itchy skin, ear infections, and digestive problems, which are often linked to a diet of poor quality or highly processed ingredients. Just add water to the dry mix to create a fresh, warm, healthy meal for your cat or dog. Go to RadioPetLady.com to call The Honest Kitchen for a free consultation about which recipe is right for your pet and to get free samples. You're listening to Cat Chat and Dog Talk, and Dr. Sean and I are talking about euthanasia and when is it too soon to put a pet to sleep. And Dr. Sean, I'm wondering, what is the experience for you like? You recently had to put your own little darling Cavalier King Charles Spaniel to sleep. She suddenly just took a terrible turn for the worse with her heart condition. How different is that for you? But you knew that she was failing for some period of time, and you called your wife and had her come over to the office, and it was obviously a big emotional time for you. Does having put a number of animals to sleep humanely with their people make it easier or harder for you to face each time?
You never want to say you get used to it. I think I get used to the situation of euthanasia and what's involved with that. I don't know that it's ever easier. I accept things. So, I warn people if they want to be present when the pet is euthanized, which many of them do, I'll warn them about things that could happen after the euthanasia. For example, the pet has already passed, but the cells in the pet's body and our bodies don't die immediately. So sometimes there'll be some jerky muscle movements. Sometimes the pet will eliminate on itself. It might vocalize or have what looks like a seizure. Those are very rare things, but they're a normal part of the body dying because the heart stops beating and the brain stops functioning, you know, cells don't die immediately. This can take half an hour or so. And I'll tell you a particularly horrible experience I had was many years ago with an elderly couple whose daughter, who was about my age, came in. They had an older pet. We needed to euthanize it. That's fine. I hadn't seen them before, but the pet was in a pretty bad way. So I said, okay, do you want to be present during this? I said, yes, you know, we've had to do this before for other pets. That's fine. So I go through my typical spiel, talking about things that could happen, talking about, you know, if the dog jumps when I'm administering the euthanasia solution, only part of it gets in. We don't want that because then they'll get very excitable rather than quickly pass. Well, sure as can be, this dog jumped, and I got half the amount in, and it went through this crazy seizure-like activity. It was yelping and vocalizing. No, it wasn't aware what it was doing. But these owners were shocked after I had warned them. So I had to reach for more. We had to hold the dog down, give it more euthanasia solution. Then I talked to the lady the next day. She said, my parents said that was the worst thing they've ever seen in their lives. I said, well, you know, I did explain to your parents what they could expect. I'm not saying they would. She goes, I know, but they really wanted to be there, and they're just in shock at what happened. I said, well, you know, it's not my fault, it's not your dog's fault, these things happen, I'm aware of it. I wasn't particularly upset myself, except I was upset the owners were there, because yes. I expect these kind of things can happen. Just like when pets are being anesthetized or waking up from anesthesia, it's the same thing. You know, they go through or can go through this excitement phase where they're not aware of anything, but it looks horrible. It looks like they're dying and they're having all sorts of problems. So as long as you're aware of that, you're certainly welcome to be part of the euthanasia experience. I was lucky with my dog. I already had a catheter in her. I was trying to save her life. I'd given her some acepromazine to help calm her down. So it didn't take much euthanasia solution to help her pass quickly. And she did it very, very peacefully. My wife didn't want to be present for that, which was fine.
Really?
Had she been present, I would have told her, you know, I can't promise this is going to go well, even though I expect that it will.
So it doesn't always go smoothly.
It usually does, but once again, if the dog jumps at the wrong time or their body reacts in a way that's a normal reaction but not an expected reaction, you just need to be aware that things are not always smooth. And would you be comfortable if your pet does eliminate himself or does vocalize like it's in pain or does seizure or twitches muscles? Once again, for me, I understand the physiology. The pet's not suffering. They're basically dead. They don't know what's happening. But the body is dying slowly. It doesn't just die immediately, even though the heart might stop beating quickly. The brain still is functioning for, you know, at least 6 minutes without oxygen, and maybe longer. The muscles can last for about another 30 to 60 minutes, which means they can twitch and do what muscles do.
Right, right, as they're deprived of oxygen.
Yeah, as they're slowly
the
dying.
Pet, when you could only get – so first you give the intramuscular injection, or maybe I guess you give it through the IV, of the sedative first so that the animal is
– It all depends on the pet. Some of these pets are very sick. They don't really need a sedative.
But the one who jerked around, had he been given a sedative first?
No, because he was pretty much out of it.
Oh, right. You said he was in bad shape.
Yeah, and most of them are that way. Most of them really don't need the sedative. The disadvantage of the sedative, although sometimes you have to do it, is it does collapse their veins. So you have to be careful that, you know, some of these pets are old. I have 20-year-old cats that are old and have kidney failure.
Right.
Well, their veins aren't good anyway. And, you know, the last cat I had to euthanize, I couldn't even find a vein. I had to give it an injection in its abdominal cavity, and it passed very quickly. But I warned the people this may take longer because – you know, I can't find a vein, so I have to wait for the anesthetic, the euthanasia solution, to be absorbed slowly from your pet's abdominal cavity. The good news was actually it was absorbed very quickly, and we didn't have a problem at all. But I warn people that it could be a longer process, and they just need to understand that.
And that and choosing the time to do it really has to be something that you do have choice, and it's a gift of euthanasia, but you don't have to force the gift. You have time to get ready for it and prepare yourself mentally. I guess that's really the point. I mean, it's bad enough to be told you go in for an exploratory surgery or something like that, and you're told, oh my God, there's cancer everywhere. We can't save the pet. But that doesn't mean that you can't have some good quality time between the now and when the quality drops off. And I guess that's really why people are lucky that there is Paws and Claws Clinic, because apparently in Texas there's a lot of like, oh well, time's up. But you have a different point of view.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. You know, and the one thing I always hate too, I don't like it, especially, you know, we have a lot of friends that don't use my services, which is fine because that can be awkward either way.
Yes.
But, you know, the one thing so far that hasn't happened yet, and I just hope it never happens, is for someone to say, well, you know, we went to Dr. So-and-so and she said it was time to let the pet go. What do you think of that? And then I'd have to say, well, people come to me because they don't want to hear that. And,
That's right. You
know, I'm known for saving those pets when other people are letting them go. So I'm really not the best person to ask, what do I think of your vet recommending euthanasia and going through with it, when my response might have been something different and now I can't change what you've done.
Yeah.
You know, don't ask me that question after the fact.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And there's, as you say, there's time to consider it. But once you've had euthanasia, it's really hard to undo death. So.
Yeah.
You know, you'd never want to have that feeling, God, I could have had my animal and I could have had another 2 weeks, 2 months. You don't know what. Nothing's written in stone. So we've run out of time, but it's been a really interesting hour, as always, Dr. Sean. So many interesting topics, so much to learn, and so many things that we all have to be on the alert about and educated about, because there are a lot of choices. There's a lot of choices, and we have to be present and we have to be involved. Thank you so much for another great hour.
Thanks so much. We will be back here next week.
Bye for now. Everybody kiss your kitties, hug your pooches. We'll talk again next week. Bye-bye.